Like, tell her to hit me up.
I know.
Hotline is 1-900. Bruh. Lift.
No S on the end.
No, because we were limited by the number of digits. So, yeah, did the.
This is Femme Strong, the podcast by, for, and about women in strength sports. I'm Jess.
I'm Britt.
Welcome to a podcast about strength sports that is not dominated by a male voice.
Nice. What's cracking?
Hey, listener at home or wherever you may be. Thanks for tuning in to episode 2, season 2. We're going to start by talking about our training.
Oh, guess what I just realized?
What?
Episode 2, season 2, is releasing
on 2/22.
On 2/2/1/22. God damn.
We could release it a day later if your type A brain can handle not releasing on a Monday.
We can say it's like the what almost was. But yeah, releasing on 2/2/1/22.
That's still a lot of twos and ones.
That's pretty impressive, I'll say that much. Impressive. Speaking of impressive things, hey Jess,
hey.
How's your training going?
It's probably not that impressive, actually. this week was my first week doing my own programming.
Yes, ma'am.
And so I'm, like, since I'm in a hypertrophy phase and I'm doing RPE based and I'm starting at a relatively low RPE, it was pretty light. I'm still dealing with an AC joint thing, and it, like, sometimes affects me, sometimes doesn't. Honestly, it affects my sleep more than anything.
Really?
I can't really sleep on my left side, and if I'm sleeping on my right side, I have to hug a pillow to keep it from, like, you know, folding over, because that hurts a lot.
Are you a side sleeper?
Usually, yeah. Ah, okay. If I'm, like, really, really tired, or if I've had a few alcoholic beverages, I'll sleep on my back. Like, I'll fall asleep like that, but I'm most comfortable on my side.
Gotcha.
Yeah, so I'm just, like, hugging a pillow all the time. But, yeah, it's going well. I think the thing that I, like, can evaluate the most is that because this is, like, the first change I've had in my training in, like, 5 years.
Yeah.
It's very exciting. I feel very, like, invigorated by my training. I'm excited to go to the gym. I'm excited to, like, collect data for myself and, like, change my programming, like, in the future and, like, take notes on that. And so I just, like, for the first time in a long time, if I'm being honest, I'm having fun at the gym.
Ooh,
which, like, I was talking with my training partner about it, and he was like, yeah, like, that's the fucking point.
Yeah.
You know, like, we do this because we love it. And if you don't love it, like, you have to make the change to make it so you do, or you have to find what you actually love.
Yeah.
And so it's really nice to, like, finally have that again. And again, this is nothing against my previous coach. I love that man to death.
Yeah.
But I just mentally needed the change. And it's really fun and exciting. And it's fun also to get people's, like, opinions and advice on my training, like Britt Truly and my partner and my training partner and stuff. So,
yeah,
it's going great. How about you?
It's going pretty good. Let's see here. I am 8 and a half weeks out.
From, oh, my gosh, that came up quickly.
Yeah, the women's pro-am. Mm-hmm. Let me think of how I want to phrase this. My number one goal of the meet is to go in and have fun and to kind of put into motion falling back in love with strength.
Shameless plug for season 2, episode 1. It's already out. Go listen to that after this.
That's my number one goal. I think it's a great one for it. You know, there's going to be so many strong women there. It's women's only. There's an amateur day and a pro day. It's going to be sick. So that. And then for the first time since I was a newbie, so, like, the last time I think I did this was, like, 5 years ago, I am signed up for 2 meets. So I am also, I am also signed up for the American Pro.
Okay.
Yeah.
Did you tell me that?
I mentioned it in passing earlier, okay, but I wanted it to be like, on the like live reaction.
But I was like, oh, like she knows a lot about that meat.
And then
the pricing.
Yeah, you're all good.
So how far out is that from?
So it's 15 weeks apart. So totally like doable. Anything less than that, and I probably wouldn't have done it. Mm-hmm. But it's also near DC, and I freaking love DC so much. Yeah. And I've never gotten to spend the time in DC that I want to spend, so in typical Brit fashion, I'm gonna do a meet and then I'm gonna take a vacation. But
oh yeah, that's the way to do it.
Yeah,
because so, you can just like kill two birds with one stone.
It'll be exciting, especially just coming in to have fun and like actually enjoy powerlifting. So my bench, I was benching when I was doing my own programming just so that I would adhere to program, was only twice a week. Mm-hmm. We're up to four times a week, and my bench is just climbing like crazy.
Is it?
Yeah. So nice. That's exciting. That makes sense. My coach is a benching specialist, so
checks out.
Yeah. Sorry, Job. But gee whiz. but yeah, so I'm enjoying it, and that gives me something else to look forward to. And then we're on the same page. It'll be a long off season back to the power building style of mm-hmm. things. So
yeah,
that's I guess how training. Oh, I got an SSB for my home gym.
Nice.
I don't know. That's kind of relevant.
It's such a versatile piece of equipment.
Yeah, we saw it on OfferUp for way less than what it would be buying it new. And I was like, dude, I got to scratch that itch, man. Got to get a new barbell every other month, apparently. I don't know. What's next?
Garage gym addicts.
Listeners decide.
Just like put up a poll. Which one should Britt buy next?
Yeah, right? Good God. Well, we've had just a couple of big lifts recently.
Mm-hmm.
Not the typical number, again, just because of recording schedule here at the beginning of season two. But did want to touch on a couple of these. So Miss Rebecca Lorch, if you guys remember, she's been on the podcast in the past.
Mm-hmm.
She just pulled 462 pounds on a power bar.
Mm-hmm.
If you guys will keep in mind, she actually had a bicep rupture last August, July,
not too long ago.
Recent enough that is doubly impressive, right?
Yes. So
if you ever personally, what I like to do is if I ever get injured, I like to go and look at other folks who had similar injuries and see what their progression has looked like. I mean, I know nobody's is going to be the same, but
mm-hmm.
it sure is encouraging when you see stuff like that.
Yeah. Well, and Rebecca is prepping for the Arnold Pro. I think she is the only lightweight competitor competing there. And they have a really, really heavy deadlift. I was going to tell you. Yeah, here we go. They have max Hummer tire deadlift. So this is a lightweight competitor going up against, open heavyweight competitor. So it's really awesome that she's hitting that number this far out. And although when the episode releases, it won't really be that far out. But at this point it is. That's what she's prepping for. But it's a huge lift for her, for sure. Right.
And then a couple of other big lifts we'll be touching on later in a preview. So the last one is Leah Reichman.
Mm.
So she is also prepping for the 2022 Women's Pro-Am.
Right.
Yeah. I'm not going to fangirl too hard. Hopefully not. We'll see.
Oh, you will, but she'll love it.
Yeah. I'll do that weird thing where I get crippled at the knees for just a quick moment. I'm like, ah. it's a condition. So squats, right? She's against 200 pounds in chains. And she ended up PRing by 85 pounds from what she did 6 months ago.
Mm-hmm.
So let me see here. It ended up being, let me play this. Sorry. 695 pounds. Plus 200 pounds in chains. I mean, girl. I don't even know what to say past that.
That is I mean, her squats are just huge. Like, they're just, like, otherworldly.
It's, oh, God, I'm about to piss you off. That wasn't even her top set.
Oh, that doesn't piss me off, but continue.
Like, in a good way.
Okay.
Fire you up. 785 pounds.
Plus 200.
Plus 200.
This woman is approaching an 1,000-pound squat.
985 pounds.
Oh, my God. So, at that competition, is it, like, one day is equipped and one day is unequipped? Or do you do it on the same day at the same time?
And she went up again. Sorry. She went up again, but it looks like she didn't really count that one. But 875 plus 200 pounds in chance. So that is...
So, you know, it's...
Literally
it's
over
1,000 pounds. Within Leah's career, she's going to hit a 1,000-pound equipped squat.
Yeah, 100 billion percent. And
history in the making.
To answer your question, I think that they're running both on both days. So,
okay.
Yeah.
That's going to be so fun.
That's what the registration looked like, at least. So, okay. Yeah. And they're also going to be introducing the new weight classes.
Right.
It's not on the website yet, but specifically, I was concerned because I didn't know if I needed to start cutting like in a minor way and then prepare for a water cut,
mm-hmm.
or if I was going to be able to compete as 100 kilo. Which is really cool to say out loud.
And so, do you get to?
Yeah, they said they're going to. So
you can just stay, right?
Yeah, I'll just stay. I might do, like, I hold water a lot, and so I can lose, like, 6 pounds with the most minor protocol.
For the dots?
Yeah, literally just for the dots. So, I do not recommend it if you don't know your body well. I've said that a million times on this podcast, but I'm telling you guys that I can cook my chicken differently and lose 6 pounds in a week. So,
yeah, like, and like if you don't know your body well and you're not an experienced lifter and you are going to try cutting, do not do it without guidance.
100%.
You need a coach. And not even just someone writing you a protocol. You need someone to check in with.
Yes.
Because that shit is dangerous.
It is.
People literally die. Get sick and die.
Yeah.
And, you know, there was that whole thing with the bodybuilder. And their water cutting last year, and so
just a couple years back. Let's see, what year was that? That might have been, wow, all right, that might have been 2017, but I remember a power lifter died on a plane in Chicago on her way to a meet because she was water cutting. So
it's not worth it.
But if you can change how you cook your chicken,
right? Yeah, if you can like and drink some extra water for a few days and then like stop drinking said extra water and lose 5 pounds, absolutely.
Yeah, but I mean, going into diuretics, honestly, it's just the biggest red flag for me, which we'll cover some colored flags later.
Yeah, this is the green flag, red flag, red light, green light episode.
Title. Games.
Yeah. Red light, green light. Yes. All right. Anyways, I'm not cutting that out, by the way. It's like when they say Inception in the movie Inception.
Yeah, and you're like, ah! Yeah.
Well, a tiny bit of short news. I don't have any other details other than that we saw that the Power Surge Pro-Am, which is another one of those big, big meets, sending out their invitations this week. So that meet is happening on October 8th. And people have to accept their invitations by March 15th. So by our next episode, if they post who accepted, I don't even know if they will, but by our next episode, at the very least, in 2 episodes, people will have accepted their invitations. Ooh, and in the future, we'll do some previews of that big meet as well.
Nice.
Coming up just like a week and a half after this episode releases, is the Arnold. And our last episode, we previewed the Arnold Pro Strongwoman, Championships. And now we're going to talk briefly about the Amateur Strongwoman World Championships. So this is March 4th through the 6th. The top four in each class qualify for finals. The first place finisher for middleweight and heavyweight women qualify for that Pro Strongwoman show the following year. This is not indicated anywhere in their material, but I know from my strongman knowledge that generally speaking, the top American in the amateur who does not already have their pro card wins their pro card at this event. And it's top American because it's supposed to be an international kind of event. I will note that this year is pretty light on the international competitors. That's COVID. Likely mostly COVID. Yeah. So it's really, there's a small number of UK folks, small number of Canadian folks, and a few Russians. There's not even any Russian women. It's just Russian men.
Really? Wow.
But it's a 3-day event, similar to World Strongest Woman, top however many make finals on Sunday. But on Friday, they have a deadlift ladder. So they go from an Ohio bar to an axle bar to a raised axle bar. They're calling it the Rogue 26er, and they're using it for more than one event. I think it's because it's on 26-inch wheels, which I guess makes that a 13-inch deadlift overall.
Yes.
Yeah. Math is not my strong point. We talked about that earlier tonight. And then they have a sandbag carried, a wheelbarrow medley. They're trying to make wheelbarrow a thing. They're using it in a lot of events.
Stop trying to make wheelbarrow a thing.
Yes. And, you know, Strongman Corporation has this pattern of having new equipment built for them and then using it for tons and tons of competitions. And right now it's the wheelbarrow.
Like, we so got they this have, shiny new thing. Let's yes, use it.
Exactly. So,
it's so fetch.
Yes. similarly, this Rogue 26er is used on all 3 days. So the first one is the deadlift, and then on Saturday it's an axle press medley. So instead of deadlifting it, they're putting it overhead. And then on Sunday in finals, they have a wagon wheel squat, and that's on the Rogue 26er. Saturday also has a bag toss over bar, and then Sunday has a mystery event that they're not gonna post until 1 week to event day. This is an old school strongman move. This is something that they used to do to World Strongest Man competitors. They used to do in nationals and things like that. And local level shows will do it more often now.
Yeah.
High level shows, people get really upset because they're kind of used to the culture of knowing the exact specifications of everything that they're going to do so they can train to like competition standards.
Yeah.
And there are certain people in the strongman world, including the promoters of this particular show, who don't feel like that is necessarily the spirit of strongman.
I was going to say, they're keeping the magic alive.
Yes. And, you know, part of it, part of strongman is overall functional strength and the ability to not only lift weight in one plane of motion, but in multiple planes of motion. And so they prefer you to have, you know, the strength in many ways, and, you know, just to be prepared for anything. And so I am going to make a prediction. I have two events that I think that this mystery event could be based on what I know about Strongman Corporation, about what I know about what they're doing on the pro day, and about what equipment they have available.
Oh, okay.
So the thing about this show, and many shows, is that they don't want to have to bring too much equipment with them wherever they're going.
Yeah.
Right?
It's not
going
to be like the
Hercules.
It's going to be
and that would be why, for instance, they're using that axle wagon wheel thing 3 times.
Yeah.
Well, you don't have to bring 3 different pieces of equipment. You only have to bring one.
Fair.
So the pro stage for the women has a max stone load.
Okay.
Over bar.
So they have a stone.
Yes. And so I think that either they'll have the finalists do a max stone load, or like a stone to shoulder, or a stone for reps over bar, or they'll use the sandbag for a sandbag to shoulder event. So that's my prediction. Just as hot take. That's what I think. I do want to really briefly go over the athletes that I think we should watch for, give a little bit of a prediction of who's going to be in or around the top three. There's a lot of people signed up. This is one of the biggest high-level competitions of the year for non-pros. More on that in a little bit. So I can't name everyone. We would be here forever. But so, you know, from each of the 3 weight classes available, the lightweights, the 4 to watch out for. The first is Chloe Brennan. She is a really prolific strong woman, known for being a natural athlete, competing against a lot of not natural athletes. She won England's Strongest Woman in 2019. She got 5th at World Strongest Woman this year. She made it to finals in the Arnold in 2020. So great athlete to watch. Christine Matthews is coming off of a 4th-place win at World Strongest Woman. That's the top American spot at World Strongest Woman in her weight class. She also has been on the scene for a long time, gotten a lot of top 3 places at nationals. Jamie Navarro got second at USS Nationals and fourth at Strongman Corporation Nationals this year. So coming off of those high placements. Carly Oliveira, I would say, is the strongest lightweight coming to this competition. But she's coming back from a bicep tendon repair surgery, similar to Rebecca Lorch. Carly is also already a pro, but when you get top three at Nationals, you get your pro card and they let you compete at the Arnold as an amateur as your last competition as an amateur, because if you win, you can then make it to the pro strongman stage the next year. Gotcha. That's actually not true for Carly because she's not a middleweight, but it's true for the other classes. But so this is her last competition as not a pro. Okay. But she has the Axel American and world record as a lightweight overhead press. She got sixth at the Arnold in 2020 and she won Nats in 2020. And so that win is what is qualifying her for the Arnold this year. She didn't have to do Nationals in 2021 because of COVID.
Okay.
Middleweights, Leah Birdsall is making her comeback. So she hasn't really competed since 2019 when she won World Strongest Woman as a U64. I believe she injured her shoulder, and that's why she hasn't competed.
The question on my face.
She also won Pro Women's Worlds, which is a USS competition in 2019, and she won USS Nationals in 2019. So she had a lot of wins, and then she took some time off, so she's coming back. Nancy Johnson has had a lot of success recently. She got fourth at World Strongest Woman in the new weight class, which is the under 73 kilo. Nice. She won the 160s at Nationals in 2021, and she won Nationals as a middleweight in 2019. She also has a deadlift record, and she's another one who's already a pro, so this will be her last competition. Jessica Mitchell is in the same, a really similar position. She's already a pro. She won USS Nats in 2021, and she won 180 middleweight Nats in 2021. And so Nancy and Jessica have been kind of going back and forth, so it's kind of like the battle of the national champions there.
Yeah.
Heavyweights, it's a smaller pool this year. I am only going to talk about two athletes who I think are going to be going head to head for that first place spot. Lauren is already a pro, already has a pro card, Lauren Wells. So she is going against Ines Carrasquillo. So Ines is going for her pro card. Lauren already has her pro card.
Ooh, spicy.
Lauren got third at Nationals in 2020. That's where she got this qualifier for the Arnold. That's where she got her pro card. And she got first place at USS Pro Women's Worlds in 2019. Ines is still really new on the scene. I think she's done like four total strongman comps, maybe a little bit more than that. She got fourth at World Strongest Woman this year, and just fourth by a hair. Like, she actually tied for third, but then they do a count back. So it's based on your, like, how you place in each of the events. And so because of that, she got fourth. And she got second place at the Rainier Classic Strongman Pro-Am. So she's really gunning for that pro card. She wants to compete at America's Strongest Woman. She wants to win World Strongest Woman, obviously, as all of us competitors do. So she's really, she wants to be able to compete at Strongest Woman in the World. So she's got a fire under her butt. We've also seen that she just axle pressed 300 pounds.
For a triple?
Yeah. And I think she did it on the log too. Or close to it on the log, if not. So she's the one to beat in this competition. I honestly don't think anyone's going to come even close to touching her.
Wow.
So that's bold. That's my bold.
No, I don't think it's any surprise. Even those of us who aren't in the strongman world know that she's an up and coming, you know, name and force to be reckoned with. So
yeah, absolutely. Well, you have a preview as well, and some predictions as well.
Yeah, well, so unfortunately, because we are releasing on 2-2, 2-1, 2-2 this weekend, which would be the weekend before this episode releases, is the Ghost Clash right down in Miami. So what that means is that me giving a full-on preview is boring because it already happened.
People are like, you're wrong. That's not who won. But anyways, continue.
Well, more like they're like, we don't care what they did in training. We already know what they did on the platform.
We saw what was actualized.
Yeah. So I am going to just give some really hot predictions. And then I'm just going to give a little update about some of the drama llama that happened before this
All right.
That it's not to do with any specific people or names. I'm not going to bring any of that into this. It's just an update on a policy. So,
all right.
Hot predictions. So, sincerely Shireen mm-hmm. is her online handle. Mm-hmm. Shireen, I have a sneaking suspicion that she is not posting her top sets, or okay. they are doing
sneaky.
Yeah. Or they are just super in the pocket. Like they are training at RPE 6 for fun. Like it's really absurd. So you're saying she
looks really crisp and clean in her list right now.
And she had no form breakdown. Like, yeah. So I think we're about to see her squat something unholy, like 675 pounds.
Wow.
Yeah. Bold.
Would that be a raw record? I always ask you questions like that.
It's okay. Everything's fine. It would be a record.
Okay.
I know that.
Okay.
I don't know specifics, but yes.
Okay.
And then also, Tamara Wilcott, mm-hmm. she just deadlifted 650, I think like 10 days out.
Okay.
And it looked like a solid heavy last single. And I know that typically when myself or my friends or lifters look like that, you are going to peak nicely and mm-hmm. add some weight to that. Mm-hmm. So if she had been peaking that very day, that would have been a nice, maybe just a slight undershoot for a third. Mm. So,
yeah, it seems like for both of these women, if their peak goes correctly,
it's about to be.
Yeah, it's about to go down.
It's going to be insane either way. They're PRing right. and they're. Yeah. Yeah. But
huge numbers yes. already so close to 700.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
So I'm calling a 670 deadlift.
All right. Gosh, we have some big numbers.
I know. Isn't this like absurd? next up is Kirsten Skirlock. So she is actually doing back-to-back from Hybrid. So Hybrid, y'all, was just like 3 weeks ago. Yeah, she just couldn't get enough sun. Hmm. But she actually specifically posted about two of her failed attempts from Hybrid. I wouldn't like talk about them, but she posted about it. So I have a sneaking suspicion that she's coming back for it. Mm. She wants those. She wants those. So she attempted 600 at Hybrid and missed it. So I'm going to bet good money that she's coming back for that 600. Yeah.
Well, and what better place to do it than the place where you missed it before? Right?
Exactly. Come back and reclaim it.
Yeah.
It's yours. And Dr. Ash Contorno.
Friend of the pod.
Ooh-wee. Miss Big Bench herself. I mean, she is going to be hitting an all-time world record. And she could be very well doing that on her second. So
on the bench.
That's, yeah.
Wow.
That's no surprise. But I think we could be seeing her squatting as big as 515, if not more.
Wow.
Yeah. Homegirls, I mean, she uses, you know, a lot of chains, a lot of bands, a lot of conjugate style mm-hmm. training. Mm-hmm. And I'm not as well versed. Yes. And I'm not as well versed about how that's going to translate into the platform. But by golly, it's going to be a hefty squat.
It's going to be a huge meet.
It's going to be pretty huge. I will say a lot of lifters had life things come up. Mm. And had to pull out. So it's going to be interesting to see what their final roster looks like. I know that the one that they published online maybe a month ago is no longer, at least for a few lifters, no longer accurate. Mm. So, I mean, like things like moving across the country because your spouse got relocated. Like completely unrelated things.
And like just things you just can't control.
Exactly.
You know, my like training group back in Minnesota, we had this saying, and it was that sometimes life gives you deloads.
Oh, you know, I like that.
You can plan your deloads as much as you want in your training, but sometimes you get sick or you have to move, or mm-hmm. a family member gets sick or your dog gets sick, you know, like,
yeah, life happens.
Yeah, or you buy a house, you know, and
yeah.
You know, lifting can be like one of the most important things in your life, but it's never more important than your livelihood, right?
Or living.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. You know, of course, there's the story of, you know, the bodybuilder living in his car outside of the gym. And
yeah,
I mean, by all means, like your passion is admirable, but for most of us, it's just not applicable.
Well, and will the barbell feed you for a lot of us? No.
No.
Some of us, yes. Must be nice. Yeah.
You know, there's a lot of people who aspire to do this for their full-time job, or they choose to try to make it happen. And do what you want. I'm not here to tell you not to. But, you know, when I think about the men who win World Strongest Man, right? Mm-hmm. None of them does this full-time.
Yeah.
Hafþór Bjørnson, movie star. Brian Shaw, coaches.
What a lovely one to start on. Yeah. Movie star. Yeah.
He also owns a vodka company. Well, you know, Brian Shaw, he owns an apparel company and he coaches and things like that. Zydrunas Savickas is the most winningest strongman in history thus far. He's a politician in the country that he lives in.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. And so, you know, you can be super, 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 super passionate about this sport. I'm sorry, I'm going on a tangent.
No, it's I'm loving it. I'm here for it, my guy. Yeah, it's almost like that's the whole point.
But yeah, you can be super passionate about a sport and still have a day job, you know, and be the highest level possible and still work a 9-to-5 or and whatever it is.
Respect that balance. By the way, just in case listeners can hear, so typically we hear Latte snoring in the background.
Snorty doggy.
You may be hearing the paws of my two dogs, Zeus and Sierra. We've got a winter dog and a summer dog here. One I adopted in Phoenix and the other one just a couple weeks ago, and she's a husky. So I guess sorry if she also talks like a husky.
We just have three mascots. It's fine.
Yeah. our team is increasing. So just a quick recap on the Drama Llama.
Oh, yeah.
And it's just more like a policy change.
And this is related to the Ghost Clash.
Yes. And here's how. So if you recall, we were talking about WRPF being the first federation to announce a pro series. Mm. And then
WRPF, what does that stand for? Sorry. World Raw Powerlifting Federation.
Thank you.
Okay. It's okay.
My brain just was like,
and I don't even know if that's actually what it is.
I think that's right.
I just, for the listener who doesn't know what the WRPF is, it's a powerlifting federation.
Yes, continue. There you go. That's the P and the F. but yeah, so they were the first ones who like got that bandwagon going of the pro series, and then a bunch of other folk or, you know, federations fell in line and started to create theirs, their respective one. Well, they ended up making an announcement, I think 8 weeks out, 7 weeks out from this meet, saying that this was going to be a required meet.
Oh, I remember that. Yeah.
So they were saying this is going to be a required... This is going to be a required meet for for the lifters in order to get their pro, if you will, their pro card, kind of, in the WRPF. And, of course, there was a lot of outrage with that, especially with the lifters who were candidates to get that pay. And so, anyhow, basically, maybe 24 hours later, I think there might have been... what's it called when you sign something in agreement that you shouldn't have it?
An NDA?
A petition.
Oh, petition. I was like, I don't even know this
time. So they did a petition and all this stuff. But now it's an optional part of the tour. And so they're going to actually add more stops and then have required meets. So, like... That aren't announced like 6 months out. So
that's nice.
It induced a policy change, but I just figured we'd touch on that before we get to our main topic.
It's kind of relieving, actually. Well, the meat of the episode, we're going to talk about
the meat of the episode,
right? Like meaty. we're going to talk about training and coaching.
Yeah, so we thought it would be good to step back just a moment and talk about like the different types of places that you'd find coaches or certified trainers. So there's a lot of, you know, in the conventional way of the world, there's a lot of different types of gyms out there. Mm-hmm. And you may not know that they are actually formally categorized, but the first category is low cost. So that's a sort of a gym where there's like no amenities. The personal trainer, there might be like one. the folks there just know how to like work the machines. Typically, there's no barbells or at least no deadlifts. Sounds to me like I'm describing Planet Fitness.
Well, it does fit the category, doesn't it?
It literally is. It's like the poster child. And then there's mid-market. So these are the ones that like over 50% of the folks train at, right? These are like the LA fitnesses, the 24-hour fitnesses. Mm-hmm. There's some amenities, you know, some limited amenities. You might have a pool, you know, you might have a steam room, mm-hmm. And you have personal trainers on staff. But then you've got like those premium fancy gyms. And those premium gyms, like, for example, like Life Time, right? They've got like salons on site.
Mm-hmm. Massage therapy.
Yes. All that. You have the most expensive training staffs there. And then you have your nonprofits, so your YMCA. And YMCAs are looking to be, you know, more inclusive and cost efficient, mm-hmm. right?
And they have, like multi-age options, family yes. options, right? Like
yeah.
it's like I feel like the other gyms are much more adult oriented, and the Y, you know, has options for families.
100%. Yep. So those are the like typical places where you'll find trainers, right? Now there's a bunch of different types of personal trainers and coaches and how you'll see their services. So there are the personal trainers that we mentioned who work in those health clubs or in a studio, right? This is what your friends who aren't in strength sports and aren't familiar with strength sports, that's who they think of when they hear a trainer, right? Mm-hmm. It's the folks who offer you a package when you sign up on your first day. mm-hmm. But then there's also fitness professionals who actually travel to a client's home.
Huh. Bougie.
Yeah, either bougie or for the elderly the folks who may not have the same capabilities of getting around. Mm-hmm. So that's honestly, that was, it feels obvious in this moment, but it was news to me.
Oh yeah. I did not know. Yeah. I mean, like I know of like physical therapists that travel
massage
to people's
therapists,
homes, but I didn't know about trainers.
Yeah. And then there's organizational wellness. This I thought was really interesting. Of course, there's never a guarantee with these sorts of things, but it's somebody who specializes in a type of personal training that helps you mitigate any sort of illnesses, stay healthy and disease-free, right?
Yeah.
So they also kind of go into it with that, like, that claim of, like, I'm going to keep you healthy, whereas, like, a personal trainer typically is going to be like, I'm going to do everything I can to support your goals. You know, I'm limited, but
yeah, I, so my personal health insurance, is like my line of work in nonprofit. We have, our own, health insurance company. Now they contract most things through Blue Cross Blue Shield, but, we have things that like they just create for us. So prior to COVID, we had, you know, one of those plans where you could get reimbursed for your gym membership.
Yeah.
And then after the first year of COVID, they got rid of that. And now they have like these three different like online organizational wellness situations. There's a physical therapy one, but then there's one for exercise and one for nutrition.
Mm.
And the one for exercise is called Burn Along. And it is very fat phobic.
Oh,
and it is so disappointing. But it's one of those things where they're, you know, they're trying to cut down on comorbidities and things like that, and they're misguided by data and things like that. Britt and I just had a conversation about that recently, but you know, it's an attempt to keep employees healthy, but in my opinion,
it's misguided.
I'm just gonna go on a rant.
Yeah,
this is why we have podcasts.
I'm gonna try to cap it to 90 seconds. I used to do meta-analysis professionally for healthcare. Let me keep it nice and vague. Corporations. And
nice.
This was my first job out of school, and I was telling Jess this earlier, you're always trying to be predictive, believe it or not. That's what they're doing. They're trying to figure out what your next illness is going to be. Mine, guarantee it's a broken bone. They're looking at, just looking at the things that have happened to me in the past, what's probably going to happen again. She's going to hurt herself. She's a klutz, right? they're doing that now. They're modeling that. And if there's things that they can...
Creepy.
Yeah. And if there's ways that they can make it so that you never have to enter their facility again, it actually saves them money. That's like the point that they're at right now.
Your insurance doesn't have to pay for you.
Exactly. And so that's what's motivating it. And honestly, the healthcare facilities are buying into that now as well. They are taxed heavily right now by something that's going on, right? COVID. Mm-hmm. So anyhow, I digress. And I'll just say that, unfortunately, if we were using BMI for our root cause, it was always pointing to BMI. Everybody, according to BMI, well, I mean, just about everybody's overweight, according to BMI. And then, especially those of us, you know, who are listening, we know bodybuilders who are morbidly obese, according to BMI. The whole point of BMI is to analyze a very large population.
Yeah, it's an epidemiological figure.
Yes.
Yeah.
And so that's the issue that we run into here, is if folks in the wellness industry are just coached that BMI runs supreme over all, or even body fat percentage to an extent, that's much better than BMI, but it can be really toxic, right? Mm-hmm. And if those programs, for example, my company has a program like that, and it has challenged me to reduce my BMI, and I'm like, and I won't be qualifying for that. Mm-hmm. And then I move on to the next option, because, you know, there's like a bunch of ways to get points.
Yeah.
And one of them is to decrease your BMI or decrease your weight.
Yes.
And I was like, can we measure this in another way? And it just doesn't offer it. So right. I'm like, whatever. I'm making enough points by like having my Fitbit log all my workouts.
Oh, there you go.
And I'll qualify. Yeah. So I'm like, come on.
Yeah, I have two additional thoughts on that. There was a point actually pretty recently in the midst of COVID where I was considering joining the military to do my particular line of work through the military. And then I saw the height and weight requirements for women in particular, although I think they probably would have let me, you know, go for the male. It's mm-hmm. still, they base it on BMI.
Yeah.
And so I, as a 6 foot tall woman, would have had to weigh 180 all the time.
Jesus Christ.
Which, like, at my leanest, I was weighing 205.
Yeah.
And, like, eating, like, chicken and broccoli all the time. So I decided, all right, well, I could maybe try to get an exception, but it's not worth it to try to go through that. I would have had to stop lifting. Like, that's the thing. That's
how I would have had to let muscles atrophy to get to that point.
Exactly. But the positive thing that I had to note was I recently got a new primary care physician, and it is the first time in my life that I've had a doctor who hasn't mentioned weight to me once, hasn't talked to me about weight, because she knows that I told her that I compete, right? And we talk about things particular to that. And so because of that, she doesn't talk to me about nutrition. She doesn't talk to me about weight, because she can tell based on my vitals and my blood work and my vitality that I'm fine.
Yeah.
And it is so refreshing, because for so long in my life, it was, oh, your BMI says you're obese.
Yeah.
And you should lose weight.
Have you considered working out? And you're like, I just came from the gym.
Yeah. It's like, oh, have you considered like going to see one of our nutritionists? And it's like, oh, actually, I pay a nutrition coach, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. But anyhow, yeah. And that is the small snippet on why BMI is inaccurate. So moving on.
There's a whole episode on that. Continue.
So you'll notice a lot of these folks are independent contractors.
These are the trainers.
So a lot of these are independent contractors. I just wanted to note that that means that you'll see very different rates across whether somebody is working as a trainer, as an independent contractor, as a direct employee, or any of that. Because if you are an independent contractor, you have to factor in all of your taxes, all of your benefits, all of that stuff goes into your rate. Whereas an employee of the company, they can kind of take some of that from just people who are paying their monthly dues. And, you know, you don't feel it so much as a client. So just something to keep in mind. It's not always a one-to-one. You don't always know what their situation is and what their contract is like. But
And rates vary widely as far as like rent at a gym goes.
Yes. And I will say, I really wanted to stress this, because this happens more than I'd like to think. Mm-hmm. But there's something called under the table. Mm-hmm. So basically, this is when you have folks, and I have to be very careful about this, because I have discussed coaching somebody who goes to the bodybuilding gym that I go to. Mm-hmm. And she's just my friend. Like, I've known her outside of the gym for a really long time. And we lift together all the time. And I give her pointers and I'll basically like do a whole workout with her, you know? And as soon as she begins paying me, I ethically should not be doing that in their facility anymore. Mm. Because that is actually considered a form of theft. Uh-huh. The health club could persecute me. You know, that gym could come after me legally, and they can literally charge you with shoplifting or trespassing. And you can have your CPT revoked.
Yeah, there was someone at the commercial gym that I train at that got kicked out for that last year. And then yeah. my partner trains his twin, and his twin doesn't pay him. But, I mean, it doesn't really matter because they're family. But he, like, felt the need to, like, go to the owner and be like, hey, like, just so you know, like, I just trained my twin. Yeah. And he's my brother. You yeah. know, like, and then he was like, oh, and, like, sometimes I give my girlfriend pointers, but, like, she's my partner.
yeah.
Because he was so nervous because he was like, well, I don't want to get kicked out.
Fair. if I were to take on that friend, unfortunately, she's been moving to Seattle. Love you, J-Dog. But if I did, I would want to approach the owner of that gym. So just a heads up for those of you who are maybe being approached by folks like that. That is a huge red flag. Run away swiftly. So
red light.
Red light. Yeah, we'll go into more of those later. But and then we'll touch on this in a moment. So what is the difference between a coach and a trainer? Kind of a hard intangible to put. So I mean, I'll say, for example, as a coach, I don't love it when people call me a trainer.
Yeah.
And
because you're not.
Because I'm not. We didn't formally define this ahead of time, so I'm just gonna give you my definition of it. Mm-hmm. So I believe that a trainer needs to be there to physically hold you accountable. And they should be encouraging you to get through every single set, rep, and workout. Whereas a coach assumes that there is some existing motivation in their client. Mm-hmm. And they're still responsible for helping tap into that, make sure that it's sustainable, make sure that it's still, you know, going to be happening in 6 months. And they still are responsible for holding their athletes accountable and mm-hmm. having those hard discussions. But they allow their athletes to pursue their own strength mm-hmm. and ask questions and be their own person, basically.
Yeah, I think, too, it has to do with goals. Mm-hmm. I think if you are someone who is looking to compete in sport, and not always, right? Like, there are people who get coaching who are not going to compete, but a lot of times it has to do with the goals of the individual. Generally speaking, in my opinion, a trainer should probably not be preparing you for a competition.
Yeah.
I think there are probably situations where they do have the knowledge and expertise, but usually if someone is a trainer by trade, they are doing that one-on-one fitness training. They're not, you know, writing a peaking program, right? That's not their expertise.
Yeah, no, that's a good point. I've definitely been approached by trainers who said that they could promise me that. And, you know, I was like, I'm coached by an extremely elite powerlifter. Thank you.
I once had someone that I went to college with who is now a trainer at a commercial gym reach out to me and ask me questions about powerlifting rules and powerlifting meets and training for powerlifting because they had a personal training client who wanted to prep for a powerlifting competition. So basically, this person was paying someone else for my advice.
Yeah. Yeah, you should have charged as a consultant.
Right. And again, there are definitely people who are trained to be trainers and coaches.
Yeah.
Those exist for sure.
And yeah, I mean, like, if you are currently working with a trainer and there you guys have a wonderful relationship and, you know, you're interested in competing, you don't need to, you know, bury that just yet. You could see if competing is the thing for you. But if they're not familiar with what all the demands of competition, you should probably look externally. Mm-hmm. at least to tell you where to look and, you know,
yeah,
message the pod.
And, you know, again, we'll get into this later, but one of the green lights that I have for a coach or a trainer is if they know their own educational limits. Yeah. So if they're like, oh, like you're wanting to do something that I don't have expertise in, let's talk to my friend who does that, or let's find you someone else who can do that.
And even if they have that conversation on your behalf, being transparent, like, hi, I didn't have the innate knowledge for this. I need to go ask around. I need to ask some friends about this. I mean, I do that at work all the time.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
Hell yeah. Yeah.
My favorite thing at work is when people ask me a question to say, I don't know. Let's find out.
It's kind of a weirdly empowering because, it like shows a confidence of like, I know that I don't know everything, but let me learn with you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Well, and one of the things that we wanted to talk about is if you are someone who is interested in strength sports, competing or not, how do you choose between a type of coach or a way to get your programming? And, you know, we talked about training versus coaching, right? So we kind of already talked about how you would choose between a trainer and a coach, but you also could get a template program from the internet. You could get one of the many, many strength training books. You could get an online programming coach. You could get an online coach. Those two things are different.
Very different.
Or you could get an in-person coach, or you could train yourself. I will say a hybrid model. Oh yeah, did you want to talk about hybrid models?
We can get to it.
Okay. Yeah, and I will just say a trainer is different than an in-person coach.
Yes.
But we're going to start with the most basic. For people interested in templates, those are just things where you fill in your numbers, or it's an RPE based, which is a rate of perceived exertion. So you choose your numbers that day based on how it feels, where you can plug in and you can make gains. For people who are beginners all the way up through intermediate folks, you can get really strong on these programs if you adhere to it and you do your recovery work, you're eating well, you're sleeping well, all of that. But if you don't have movement pattern knowledge, if you haven't been taught how to do, you know, most lifts or exercises, it probably isn't going to work for you because you don't have any guidance and you could be doing things completely wrong, right? And then also for people advancing beyond intermediate, there's going to be a point where a template isn't going to work for you anymore, but there are a ton of templates out there for, you know, beginner to intermediate folks. 5-3-1 strong lifts, which is 5x5. Starting strongman for folks who are interested in doing strongman has a ton of online resources. And there are some coaches and athletes who do train along programs, so you can just do the program that they've written for themselves, not get any coaching, just like do what they're doing with your numbers.
And I will also say, for all of these templates that we're mentioning, there's usually a Reddit thread that goes along with it. So a bunch of folks who are running the same template as you will be subscribed to that.
Yes.
Huge cautionary flag. A lot of the people are going to give you kind of bogus feedback as far as there'll be, what's it called, technique checks or they call it different things, form checks, stuff like that. So proceed with caution, but it can be a good community, especially if financially working, you know, one-on-one with a coach or something is something that just isn't in the cards for you right now.
It's a good
way to build community too. I go on there for practice for how to explain concepts. I go on there and then I'll log off and I'll come back and I'll have like 50 notifications and I'm like, oh shit.
Yeah.
But
for people interested in strongman, the Facebook group Starting Strongman is a great place for similar types of information if you're not a Reddit kind of person, and I'm sure there are powerlifting options for that as well. But yeah, templates and books are great affordable options for people who maybe can't afford online coaching or maybe aren't sure that they're ready.
Yeah.
Right?
Don't know if that's an investment you want to make just yet.
Yeah. A book is a great option if you want more in-depth explanations of why you would do a particular set and rep scheme and what movements and exercises you would choose. They can also explain movement patterns and form if you can learn that way and apply that information from that. If you're not someone who learns that way, you're going to find out pretty quickly.
And we'll go ahead and include on our Instagram post some good options here, whether it's blogs or books or even maybe even YouTube series or something like that. But we'll try and get some of those published when we release this episode.
Yeah. And if you decide that coaching is something that you want to invest in, it's important to know that there are different tiers and types of coaching. And generally speaking, the price that you pay is going to reflect that. So the cheaper option is usually going to be an online programming coach who's going to give you a program to follow, often based on your one rep max or, you know, maybe a three rep max, whatever. And they provide guidance for you as far as the sets and reps and exercises. So this is a good option for you if you don't need a ton of help with your form and movement patterns. And this works for tons of intermediate and advanced lifters. And it can be particularly helpful in peaking for a show or a meet. But if you are someone who needs or wants help with your movement patterns and your form and your technique and sport specific things, an online coach beyond an online programming coach is going to be probably more beneficial for you. So those are someone who, you know, you're going to send video to either through an app or through a messaging service. So it's really similar to a programming coach because they're going to write a program for you, but that includes help. And that's for really lifters of any level, but often intermediate to advanced lifters.
Yeah, and I'll say, sorry to interrupt, but okay. I know a lot of coaches, myself included, who offer both. Mm. So, like, I offer online programming at a much, much discounted rate because the time put forward, I mean, you're really paying for the person's time, right? Mm-hmm. Is significantly
capitalism.
Less. Capitalism. Yeah, right? And if you, and then furthermore, I'll expand on that. If you hired someone as an online coach and you are paying them to be your online coach and you are just getting an online programming coach, you need to hold them accountable. Like, you're paying for a service. Or you need to contact them, communicate your needs and renegotiate if needed. But mm-hmm. I'm empowering you right now.
Yeah.
If you were promised an online coach and you're getting programming, hold them accountable.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And advocate for yourself.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
There, as far as in-person options, it's kind of two ends of the spectrum. And one, we've really already talked about, if you are new to these movement patterns, to the lifts, to the gym in general, a trainer is going to be right for you. Or if you're new and you're wanting to do powerlifting, Olympic weightlifting, but you don't know how to do those movements, an in-person coach is probably your best bet and your safest bet. And then the other end of the spectrum, there are a lot of advanced athletes that will work with an in-person coach so they can perfect technique, but also so that the coach can make changes to the program in real time based on how the athlete's body is performing. Super common in Olympic weightlifting.
This is where I was going to mention the hybrid model. So mm-hmm. it's very common with those advanced lifters to have a hybrid model where they physically, I mean, I know folks who have literally traveled from Alabama to Washington, some even farther, I think, just to, you know, grab a couple of sessions with their high-end coach. Mm-hmm. There's a lot to be gained by that. I feel like that's a huge testament, right? Being willing to fly cross country.
Someone's willing to fly across the country for a coach.
Right. Yeah. But, you know, in a much more less extreme version, you know, working with a coach once every 2 weeks, you know, you're struggling with implementing a cue that they give you. Mm-hmm. Book a session with them and, you know, just get that in person, and they might figure out in person why that cue wasn't the best option for you.
Yeah.
So, yep. That's the hybrid model.
I think, you know, bodybuilders are another group of people that often use a hybrid model, maybe even between programming coaching and actual coaching based on if they're in season or off season. Bodybuilding, especially when you're close to competition, is such a change by the minute sport, right?
100%.
You got to change your carbs or change your water. Or
yeah. Get
if
a gram of sodium on deck. Stat.
Yeah. And that's more nutrition. Maybe a little bit further out from a meet, it's like, oh, like your glutes need to be brought up in this next month or whatever. And that is something that you can't get with just a programming coach. Mm-hmm. And sometimes you even need in person. And they'll do check-ins and things like that. The other thing to think about is when to program for yourself. Britt and I have both programmed for ourselves very recently, as in me right now.
In this
and
moment.
Britt, like, at, you know, was up until, like, what, a month ago?
Yeah.
How did you decide to program for yourself?
So, I'll start with this. I followed this exact model, right? I mean, minus the personal trainer, because I was a collegiate athlete with a strength and conditioning coach, but let's just pretend that's similar. Yeah. So, you know, I invested in books. I got to reading books. I was on those online Reddit threads. You know, I was learning from the folks around me, and I decided that I wanted to program for myself primarily for the flexibility. At that time, I was traveling Monday through Friday, if not Monday through Sunday, for work. So that was a lifestyle thing, right?
Right, yeah.
That kind of forced my hand. I really didn't want to be investing in paying someone if I couldn't be consistently reliable and consistently accessing the same equipment. This time, I decided that I was ready again because I was able to hold myself accountable to knowing what my weaknesses are. Mm-hmm. I felt that I was ready to program things that were not going to be fun for me, that were going to challenge me and push me to be a better athlete. And that was a level of maturity that I knew I did not have up until maybe the last year. I knew that I would go right into, believe it or not, programming Bulgarian split squats. I fucking love that shit. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. I knew that I was going to program the stuff that I like, right?
Mm-hmm.
Whereas this time came back and knew that I was ready. So I think that was the biggest decision maturity wise for me, was just knowing that I was going to actually give myself the things that I needed,
mm-hmm.
you know, as opposed to what was fun or gave me dopamine for the day.
Go listen to our last episode.
What about you, Jess?
I had a different beginning in strongman, but I was also a collegiate athlete. And I have always been coachable. Like, that has been my thing since I was like 12. Like, I am really good at learning from a coach and doing the things that they want or need me to do. And that is what got me from most improved sophomore year as an award from College Track to MVP junior and senior year.
Oh, yes, right? Ma'am.
Because I just, I have that mindset. And I actually started strongman with getting coaching. I found a strongman specific gym serendipitously. That's a story for another time. And I began working immediately with an in-person coach. And like, my membership and coaching fees were one and the same.
Mm.
And then when that gym kind of closed down, I began working with the coach that I just, that I ended up working with for 6 years. And I was seeing him once or twice a week to train with him, both as friends and as coach and athlete. And then he was writing me programming. And then, so basically I took a backwards approach, right?
Yeah.
And then when I moved from Minnesota to Oregon, he became my online coach and mm-hmm. not an online programming coach. I was sending him multiple videos every time I was lifting, and he was responding as necessary, right? If a set was beautiful, he would either say good job or not respond. But if there was things that needed to change, or if I needed support, he was there. And there was a lot of times too where, like, in the moment, like, a deadlift session was going bad and he was talking me through it.
Yeah.
Just like really great, and also very affordable because he was my friend. But I got to a point, and I shared this in the last episode, so I won't belabor the point, where I just couldn't adhere to the program anymore and I needed a change. And I felt like my experience and then the education that I have done just in learning about strongman, but also honestly for this podcast, has made me feel like I can program for myself. And I have people in my life who are looking over my program for me, such as Britt. And I am programming the things that I'm bad at. Just was, you know, doing front squats on Saturday.
I noticed.
Yeah, front squats with a pause. And I hated every second of it, but I knew that I needed it. And the fact that I hated it was why I needed
exactly.
it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
But in programming for myself, I looked at a lot of those templates. And I did a lot of research about peaking and periodization and like how you might mold periodization to work for strongman. Periodization is just like a long-term look at your training. We can talk about that on a different episode. So, yeah, I think there's a level of maturity that often is needed if you're going to program for yourself, like Britt mentioned.
Well, and I'd like to emphasize, it's not that you have been training for 6 months and got bored.
Right.
That's not what has happened here. You've been religious, well, I'm going to say it religiously, doing your program, following it to the T for how many years?
Six years.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's not that, you know, you messed around, got bored, and I have, you know, decided that you're ready to self-program. No, like, you have dedicated years. The better half of a decade. Oh, I got old. To say it to it. So I just wanted to clarify, mm-hmm. like, yeah. I don't want anybody to extrapolate from this improperly.
Right. But yeah. Britt and I have been competitive athletes for pretty much our entire lives. And yeah. we both had experience as college athletes and high level college athletes, as in, like, Britt had records at her school
until now.
I know.
No, I'm so happy about yeah. that. It was such good news.
I still have the number 2 for the shot put of my college. It's fine, everything's right. fine. Well, now we're gonna play a little game of red light, green light, all Squid Games. If you haven't seen it, go watch that show. If you can handle gore.
Yeah, I watched like the first 3 episodes, my guy. But anyway,
by the way, I finished the season of the show that we talked about.
Oh,
we'll talk about later. That after this. So if you were choosing a coach, a game, what would make you say red light?
Hell no. You know.
Maybe I'll talk about what would make me say red light.
I was going to say.
We do not want to contribute to any drama that might be happening on the internet. So this is not one of those situations where we are noticing that this is happening. This is simply a red light that everyone should know.
This isn't designed or targeted. This is simply prolific.
Yes. Yeah. It happens way too often. And that is coaches being inappropriate with athletes. So red light, any coach who speaks to you inappropriately, asks you for inappropriate photos, makes sexual jokes to you, no matter how overt or covert, a coach who asks you out, mm-hmm. also a red light. It doesn't matter if you're the same age and both single, a coach sleeping with an athlete who is paying them for a service is not consensual. That is not a consensual relationship. The power dynamic in place does not allow for consent to exist.
Yes.
So if a coach was interested in an athlete romantically and that athlete reciprocated that romantic feeling, they would need to terminate their coaching relationship before moving forward. I understand that that doesn't always happen and that there are people that are super happy in long-term relationships from coaching or like from where they met through coaching, or maybe they're even still being coached by that person. But more often than not, it is inappropriate for that to be happening.
Well, and the payment, right?
Yes.
Yep. Let's like flip it. I know that a lot of the time the coach has the power in this power dynamic, but ultimately the coach is also your employee. So it's inappropriate.
Both twice directions. Over. Yeah.
So terminating that contract, whatever may be in place.
Mm-hmm. Well, and you know, a lot of times a coach might be a high level power lifter, a high level strongman competitor, a mm-hmm. high level bodybuilder, and then they are starting to speak sexually to their athlete. And the athlete is like, oh, like, this is...
Oh, me, oh, my. This is a big name.
Yeah, this is a big name. They're really popular. They're really attractive. They're mm-hmm. really strong. What's going to happen if I turn down their sexual advances, right?
Yeah.
Are they still going to like me?
Are they still going to coach me?
Am I still going to be accepted in their circle?
Yep.
It's really yucky. And it, like Britt said, it's really prolific. So that's a red light.
And then for irony, the next one is coaches who badmouth other coaches. Mm-hmm. I'm just laughing because we're talking about other coach behavior. But yeah, anytime that, especially, I'll say that this can be a tricky line, especially if a athlete approaches you just ready to rock and roll and just talk mad shit.
Mm-hmm. It's so easy to fall into.
It's so easy to fall into, but... First off, word gets around. Like, even if you feel you trust this person, it's just not in the coach's long-term you know, benefit to engage in this behavior, but also is ethically wrong, mm-hmm. right? I just find it unacceptable, like just dragging another coach, especially to give yourself some sort of competitive gain, you know, to get a new client. Mm-hmm. It's, I guess I'm just belaboring the point of it's gross, mm-hmm. but what about?
Similar vein, mm-hmm. coaches who badmouth former athletes.
Ah, yes.
It's not professional.
Or who share their, I'm not going to say secrets, but the things that that coach might have told them in confidence. Mm-hmm. Betraying ex-athlete's confidence is,
right.
first of all, a breach of, oh no.
Confidentiality.
Thank you. I was so ready to say the word, a breach of confidentiality. So it's ethically like 100% wrong, but it's also what's going to happen. It makes you afraid of leaving that coach, because then what are they going to say about you once exactly. you're done working with
exactly.
them?
Exactly. Yes. So. I think another red light, I don't want to do too many negatives, but is coaches who are dogmatic about particular exercises or particular styles of training. I had a really great conversation with a very good friend who is now coaching for a particularly popular company, and he was talking about how he is using so many different types of training for all of his athletes, right? So yes. he was like, oh yeah, I'm using French contrast for one athlete and conjugate for another and this for that athlete. And it was someone who was like, yeah, like there is this wealth of information about training people from across the globe, and I'm going to use it to the best of my ability to make each athlete the best that they can be.
Like a custom experience, mm-hmm. as opposed to copy-pasting the same approach and exercises.
Right.
Across. If you are looking at a potential coach's tagged section, and you notice that every single athlete is doing the exact
same thing.
Run, baby.
Yeah. Because you don't have the same needs and growth areas as someone else does.
Yeah. I mean, your body is different, like mm-hmm. physically different, mm-hmm. guarantee it. You know, you have a different experience. You may have a different background in different athletics than that person. Mm-hmm. And that makes a huge difference
too. Your brain probably works different.
1,000,000%. Mm-hmm. Yeah. You're probably at a different time in your peak too. So. Mm-hmm.
Yes. Yeah.
yeah. I think that's a great one. So
yellow lights,
as far as, yeah, I guess yellow lights, this isn't, we've lost the plot. It's no longer like, that show, but
in the actual children's game when I played it, there was,
oh, really?
Yellow lights.
Oh, I didn't know.
Like walked or anyways, continue.
Just Midwest things. I love you.
Hashtag just Midwest things.
Oh, so confusing you with other clients. So I know that everybody who's worked with a coach, in some way this has happened, mm-hmm. you know, and it can hurt your feelings. You know, you want to think that you are the most unique and, you know, everything about you is special. And it can be.
You are special. You're made of stardust. Let me be clear.
But people have off days, right? And that includes coaches. So, you know, sometimes it can be an honest mistake, especially those coaches who make themselves available at all times. Mm-hmm. They might not have their note sheets up. They might be out at dinner with their family and they see your video, you know, while walking to the car from the car, and they're going to give you a quick response. Fair enough. They confuse a back injury with a hip injury. Fair enough. But mm-hmm. keep in mind that is still a breach of confidentiality. So mm-hmm. now you know that one of the other clients have that issue. Mm-hmm. And it can be an early indicator that they might have too many clients on their plate, and they might not be giving you the attention that you're paying for long term.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, sorry. That was...
That's okay.
The next one is the coaching systems, right?
Yeah. Another yellow light, right? So don't necessarily end things or don't necessarily choose not to work with this person. But if they are working within a coaching system, right? So there are these companies or organizations that have multiple coaches and they kind of share the load. And you don't know who you'll be interacting with. You're just receiving feedback from the page or, you know, in the app. Mm-hmm. In some cases, if you ask, they'll tell you who it is that you're particularly speaking to and giving you feedback. But if you request this and they don't do it, that'll move up to a red flag. So you just really want to be careful if you're moving, if you're working within a coaching system with someone, because you need to get what you're paying for.
And they can be great, right? It can be awesome to have fresh eyes on you all the time. And that's why we made this a yellow flag. It can be a great thing, but proceed with caution.
Right.
Basically.
Yes. Almost. Move slowly.
And then to kind of related to that is if the coach that you're working with has not, maybe not competed in, but at least trained in the stance or the style that you're lifting with. So, for example, if you pull sumo and your deadlift, or in your deadlift, and your coach has only ever pulled conventional ever in his entire life, or their entire life, shouldn't have gendered that.
It's all good.
it can be a yellow flag, right? Mm-hmm. So some coaches are so so well trained, and they've learned so much, and they've gained so much experience over the years that they can speak to what you should be doing with sumo with confidence. You know, they're very well educated, but it can be a yellow flag. You know, they might not be, you know, if you haven't done something, you're not familiar with how that physically feels for you. You know, theories can only get you so far. So that's why we made it a yellow flag. It's definitely not a red flag. Some coaches really can overcome that. And it just has to do with the education.
Yes. Right? Yeah. Yeah. And how they apply their education.
Yes, ma'am.
Ready to talk about green light?
Yeah, positive stuff to end out the episode.
So I think for me, the very first thing that I thought of when a green light for a coach is a coach who will ask you what your goals are and will base their work with you off of said goals. And this kind of directly counteracts, you know, what we were talking about earlier as far as like red flags of like your programming looking exactly the same as everyone else's programming who they're coaching, because your coach is individualizing your programming for you.
Yes. And then, you know, similarly to what we just touched on is coaches who know their own limits, right? They don't step outside of what they're trained to do. They go and ask other folks maybe for help, or they might redirect you, for example, if you have an injury and it's beyond what they're able to practice, they refer you to a PT or a chiropractor, right? That's a huge green flag to me.
Yeah,
if my coach goes, oof, I can give you these safe drills, but you need to see a PT.
Like, exactly.
Huge green flag. Yes.
You know, in like the PT world, for instance, they might call that scope of practice, right? Yeah.
Yeah.
I think another green light is a coach who adapts to your style of learning and what cues work for you. You know, not everyone learns how to do a lift the same way, or, you know, one cue might work for me that doesn't work for Britt. And a really good sign of a good coach is someone who pays attention to what works for you and continues to do that.
Yeah. And similarly, coaches who pay attention to what sort of encouragement you need, right? So some folks do really good with a drill sergeant. That's what they need. That's what they want. That's what they're paying for. And then there's some folks whose internal monologue is already a drill sergeant. They don't need another one. They want a coach with some compassion, some empathy, to give them some grace, right? And it's understanding and being reactive to what that athlete is actually looking for in the behavior of their coach.
Yeah.
And that might not be something that they know outright, right? Especially if you didn't grow up as an athlete. You might not know what you want just yet, and that's fine.
Right.
A coach should be willing to work with you on that and adjust.
And it probably will change for different seasons in your life, right? Great point. There might be times where you're like, okay, I'm 8 weeks out from a meet. I need a drill sergeant right now. And then there might be other times where it's like, oh, I'm going through a lot of transition in my life. I need some understanding.
100%.
Yeah. Yep.
Well, I'll be. We covered a lot of lights.
Those are just some green lights. I think also for me personally, if I'm picking a coach and a lot of people that work with them have great things to say about them and have had really good experiences, that's a green light.
You know, and contradictorily, right? Like, if you're hearing a lot of red flags, baby girl, run. So yeah. I think most of all, it's just ask around, right? Mm-hmm.
There's Do your research. Do your due diligence. Yeah.
Asking around, seeing what you can expect from what you're paying for. I think that's the number one thing. Mm-hmm. And most folks are very accommodating for that. You know, anytime with any of the coaches I've worked with, you know, I get a DM, everybody's super nice about it and usually pretty confidential too, especially if you ask, hey, you know, I don't know you. This is going to land in your message requests, but I'm curious.
Right. Yeah. You
know? Yeah. Most people are pretty receptive to that. Mm-hmm. They're working with their coach for a reason. They want to give you genuine feedback.
But... yeah. And at the end of the day, this is someone that you're paying for a service. And so you should treat it as such and make sure that your money is going somewhere that's worth it.
Exactly.
To round out the episode, we want to remind you that we would love it if you would review the podcast on whatever platform you listen, if they do reviews. I know not all platforms do, but Apple and Spotify in particular do. And when you do that, take a screenshot of the screen that says, congratulations, you've submitted a review or whatever it might say, and send it to our Instagram page by April 1st. Mm-hmm. If you do that, you're going to get entered into a raffle to win some FemStrong swag.
And follow our FemStrong page.
Yes.
To be clear.
Yep. Follow us on Instagram. Like and subscribe on Apple Pod or Spotify. We are hoping to, by the end of this year, get on YouTube, so stay tuned for that. Yeah. Thanks so much for listening to FemStrong, the podcast by, for, and about women in strength sports. Britt, where can they find you?
Sure thing. On the gram, I am Bruhlifts. That's Bruh underscore Lifts.
And I'm Jess, and you can find me also on Instagram, JessKah_P. The podcast Instagram is FemStrongPod on Instagram. Thanks so much for listening.
Ta-ta for now.